Welcome to Tech Talk with Blossom. I'm your host, Blossom Babalola, and today I have a special guest with me, Nicholas Oket, a software engineer with more than a decade of experience. He also has specific domain knowledge in backend engineering and IoT engineering. He also has a platform where he teaches software developers to be better developers by learning about systems design. Today, we'll be having a chat about his tech career, his journey, and everything else in between. I'm so honored to have you here. Thank you so much for making time for this. So first, how would you explain your job to a five-year-old?
Yes, it's a good question. And by the way, it's my pleasure to make some time. Explaining my job to a five-year-old. So right now I am an IoT engineer. I do research and development. And so how would you explain that? I think I would say that I try to figure out how to make big machines talk to each other and then tell them how they are, right? Mm-hmm. And then I also try to find out how to listen to these machines. And in order to do that, I use a computer. That's how I would.
As a five-year-old, I would have been so excited. You make big machines talk to each other? Can you make my toy cars talk to each other?
Yes.
What would you say piqued your interest about tech? What got you into tech?
That's also a good question. I think when I was younger, like 14 years or 15 years old, I think I saw the movie then from The Matrix. I don't know if you've seen it already.
I have.
So I was, it's an old movie, right?
But yeah.
Immediately it caught my attention and I was like, yes, I want to be the best hacker in the world.
I think hacking is such a cool way to, what's the word, indoctrinate kids into tech, because I saw a lot of hacker movies growing up and I was like, yeah, this is the only thing for me. This is the only path for me. I want to be a hacker. I think what's the coolest thing you'd say you're working on right now?
Actually, for my job, I can't tell you much about the exact thing that I'm working on. However, I'm working for Gem1 right now, and that's a company that makes, how should I put it, IoT devices to track industrial machines, right? And I've never done that before. Mm. It's a very interesting section. It's really, really cool in my opinion. And so I think the coolest thing is just a program for these little devices, right? Every once in a while, we need to create some software for them. And I think that's really cool.
Yeah, that sounds cool.
Also, it's a different language that I'm used to. I'm used to writing Java, but for those small machines, you usually write C code. And I mean, if you're used to Java and to C Sharp and Python and whatnot, going back to C is like, poof, it's mind blowing. Yeah.
I was going to ask, you said it was like a totally new field from what you've ever done. I was wondering how difficult it was to kind of like move from, you know, backend to IoT engineering. How difficult was it? You had to learn C programming, right?
Yes, for example, learning C programming. But also, I was actually very lucky because I do not have any electrical background or any background in low-level communication or something like that. And these are all things that you need for IoT, right? I mean, you need to know how the internet works. Everybody knows on a big level, but like TCP, what is that? What are the layers of communication? Mm. I mean, I've learned that in school, but all right. And then all of a sudden you have these small devices.
Now you have to use them for real.
Yeah. And then, oh, damn, how is this working? I have no clue. And then, you have to start Googling it. I actually have to Google for half of the job that I need to do. And that's why I'm lucky, because that's what they said. They said, we need somebody with stronger programmational skills, and we will be happy to teach you all the rest, because it's really hard to find somebody who has the programming experience that you have, but also has the electrical background that we need. And so we are willing to make that effort. And I was like, oh, thank God.
Yeah. You mentioned that you didn't have the electrical background, and it doesn't sound like you got lucky though. You were prepared. You already had all the programming experience they needed, and they were willing to, you know, get you trained in what they wanted you to know. But would you say that as, I don't know, an entry-level IoT engineer, would it be difficult without the electrical background?
It depends. I think the biggest skill that you need is just being able to learn. And the faster you can learn, the better. It never stops, right? It doesn't matter if you do IoT or if you do just back-end or front-end programming. Tech world goes so fast. You just need to continuously learn. And this is what I'm doing right now, learning all the time. And
yeah.
The entry level is just the electrical things. At first, it also depends on what you want to do. Like, for example, every once in a while, if we need to try out something, because I am in research and development, so sometimes we need to just try out something. Mm-hmm. And then you just need to take a screwdriver and undo the screws and just look at the electrical wiring. But that's because I'm required to do so for my job, right? Mm-hmm. If you are an entry level IoT, you don't always need that immediately, right? Mm. So you could start with just thinking how these small devices, how will they communicate? How will I be able to listen to whatever they say? It's more, I think so. In the beginning, it's more problem solving that you will be doing, right? Mm. What do I want to get out, and how will I do that? And so it's higher level. Mm. And I think the more time you spend in it, the lower level you will go. And the more... Yeah, that's what I think.
That's interesting. So from what you've said, I see that there are lots of transferable skills from regular software engineering. There is the problem solving. You need to know how to problem solve and learning. I think that's a pro, and in my opinion, also a con of software engineering. It like swings both ways. You just can never stop learning. You stop learning and then you crash. So you have to keep on learning.
Exactly. That's true.
I know this role is kind of challenging, but I still have to ask, what would you say has been the most challenging part of this new role? Not necessarily new role, this IoT engineer role. What has been the most challenging part to you?
It's actually all the new stuff, the protocols, the low-level protocols. And sometimes when you write software for that, you need to understand the domain that you're working in with these protocols. And it's like a giant puzzle. And at first, when you look at it, you're like, my God, what is this? And how will I do this? Right. And it seems like there's an incredible amount of unknowns, and it can make you feel insecure. And that's when that's really challenging, in my opinion. For me, that's been the most challenging thing. There's so many things that you don't know, but that you have to do in a short amount of time. And so, you figure out how to make the puzzle work. That's it.
Compared to back-end engineering, would you say IoT engineering is so much harder? I know we don't like to make that comparison in tech about one field being more difficult than the other, but sometimes it just happens that some field require much more technicalities than the other.
I would say yes, actually. It seems like my colleagues they know so much more about everything. Of course, I'm also...
Everyone thinks their colleagues know so much more.
But it looks like there's so many things coming from backend that I did not have to know or care about, but now I do. Mm. For example, if you write software for small devices, simple stuff like logging becomes so much more difficult, because you cannot write 10,000 log files on this small machine. So how are you going to solve that, right? It's just small stuff like this that becomes so much more complex. There's little storage on these small devices, if storage at all. If you write
Okay,
it is,
wow.
It is. Yeah, if you write programs for that, these programs should be small and very efficient most of the time. That's also hard to do. I don't know how to do that either. And then this is something that I did know, but because I've worked with a lot of asymmetrical and async communication, but when you have, for example, 20 machines that talk to each other and spill a lot of information at a time, that's also challenging to know how to do that. All of these events, all of that data, how will you store that? Does it matter the order? Does it matter or not? Stuff like that.
Yeah.
So I think it is harder. I think it is harder.
So it's kind of like a little bit easier for IoT engineering going into backend engineering, since they already do a lot of this low-level programming stuff.
Okay. That's an interesting remark that you made. Because one of the other things that I do is coaching the other. There used to be more, but now there's only one left. My other colleagues into software design. And so even though they have this huge knowledge on electronical stuff and whatnot, creating valuable long-lasting software is something, you know, that they haven't thought about yet. And so explaining these concepts and why they have to do them, because some of these software principles are like, why would you do that? I do not get why. Because they do not have the experience when it goes bad, right? They don't have that, and that's tough to explain. That's tough to learn as well.
Like swings both ways. Possibly an IoT engineer that's transitioning into backend engineering might feel the same way that you currently do.
That's why I think it's a good remark of you. It's interesting.
Yeah, that's interesting. Okay, but we definitely have to talk about your systems design course. I don't know if I told you, but I am registered on the platform. I'm a beneficiary of the platform, and I'm definitely going to be linking it in the description. It's all the times I've seen systems design being talked about is by senior software engineers. So it's like, okay, the junior entry, mid-level do not need systems designs in their application building. So I'm just going to ask you, what do you think about systems design currently? At what stage should a software engineer start incorporating systems design in their project?
That's true. But everybody now is learning the latest frameworks and data structures and algorithms to get their first job.
Yeah.
But from the moment that they have the first job, I think they should be learning either system design or software design from the start. It's otherwise you'll be working on stuff for 4 or 5 years and you still do not know how to write good software, but you will be looked at as a senior because you have 5 years of experience, but actually you still don't really know how to write good software, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's so important to start learning this as soon as possible, because the sooner you learn it, the more valuable a programmer or engineer you will be. That's how I about it. And also it's just you also have to look at it from a software engineer point of view, but another one. Imagine that you write some code and it's really hard to understand and everything is really coupled and whatnot. And then all of a sudden somebody else needs to look at that and solve a problem. I mean, the frustration is
But you used software designing and systems designing interchangeably. Are they the same thing?
It depends. If you look at your application as a system, then system design is the same as software design. However, there are people who also say system design is actually also how you deploy your application, right? Like more DevOps stuff. How will people be able to communicate with this? Will there be a layer in front of it? For example, firewall I forgot the name. Some software that will decide if there's too many users, like this user is going to this instance of your application and the other user is going to another instance. general problem solving for your application. Some people say that this is also system design. I don't really care. I focus more on actual software.
Yeah.
But I think it's both interesting to know if you have an application, how will it respond and how will it act in real life, and how can I solve problems that will arise?
Yeah.
I would say that software design, you should learn this first before you look at the other stuff. Because if your application is crap, then, I mean, it will never get into production.
Okay. I was just going to ask that. I was going to ask the best time to, you know, design your software, or design your system before developing the application or during the application.
That's a good question as well. And the answer, in my opinion, is both. So you before you start coding, you think and you try to understand the problem, and when you understand the problem, you try to split it up into meaningful classes or code files or whatever you want to name it, it doesn't matter. And you always need to think about change. If something changes, if my stakeholders want something changed, how can I make it so that the change is easy, that it does not cost money and time?
Yeah, but that's a really good one.
Yeah, and it never stops. You everything changes.
Yeah.
So your design should also change along over time. And that's why it's so important to understand this, because as a developer, you need to see these changes that are coming and you need to know how to handle them well.
Yeah, yeah. So what is one thing you wish you knew earlier on in your career?
And my new career, also a good question. Well, actually, I would say if I knew that it was okay to make mistakes and to fail, because I think I'm very, very ambitious and I was always afraid of making mistakes, and it doesn't look professional. That this was the idea that I had. It does not look professional to make mistakes. But on the other hand, somebody who does never make mistakes actually doesn't do much, and he or she doesn't learn much either. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's one thing I'm also starting to embrace, that it's okay to make mistakes. It's okay to fail. The most important thing is, what do you do after you've made a mistake?
Yeah. Exactly. Be honest about it. If you make a mistake, just tell somebody and say, I probably done something stupid. Please help me.
True. What are the three soft skills you consider most important?
First and foremost, problem solving. I think the biggest skill that you can have, which is not technical, so any junior can have this skill, is this being able to look at a problem and say, this problem is actually three smaller problems or four smaller problems. And so I'm going to do the smaller problems one by one in order to solve the big problem. And I think that's the biggest one. Also being curious and always open to learn, always. In tech, that's really important because it never stops.
yeah.
So learn, try to learn every day. It's not easy, but I mean, you know, and also actually when I say be open to learn, I also mean, like, if you have an opinion and somebody else has a different opinion, you can be really arrogant and say, you're just a junior or a medior and your opinion doesn't count or is by default wrong. But I think you should always be open to learn and let the person speak, because maybe they have an insight that you have never thought about.
Yeah.
And in tech, since you cannot know everything, and actually, you know how much all of your coworkers know, that's it.
Okay.
That's I see it.
That's really good and true and true.
And the last one is communicating. You need to be able to communicate. So don't get angry when somebody is screwing up or is making a mistake. But on the other hand, if people make criticisms about your work, you should also not get angry, right? Take it for what it is. People are trying to help you.
Yeah.
Being able to listen to your stakeholders, like, what do they really want? Solving a problem for them. So you should, you know,
try maybe to listen to them. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Try to feel what they feel and put yourself in their shoes. I think that's also really important.
Yeah.
Sorry.
You are going to add something.
When you also need to be able to communicate well with your coworkers, right?
Definitely.
If you have a problem, don't be afraid to ask if they have a problem and it seems very urgent. I mean, take some time or spend some time for them and help them out. It can mean the world to them, right?
Yeah. You know, one of the things you mentioned was don't take your criticisms, like don't get angry, just take it well. I think I had to unlearn that. Every code review felt like a personal attack, which it wasn't. Everyone on the organization is just trying to, you know, make the software better and make better software. And I also had to learn that problem solving is actually a skill I could learn. I just thought, oh, you know, it's for the talented few. But problem solving is actually a skill. I started to learn it and I was like, oh, you know, you can actually find solutions to everything that doesn't necessarily translate to code. If problem arises at home, you can, you know, find a way to break it down to, you know, solvable, like you said, smaller problems, smaller solutions. So yeah, I think that's like really good. And yeah, I'm going to ask you, everyone knows how great working in tech is. Like you probably know, working in tech is great, but there has to be some downsides for you personally. What would you say those has been, if you have any?
Yeah, for sure. On the top of my head, I would say the biggest benefit of the biggest skill that you can have in tech is also the biggest downside. And that's, you have to learn. Mm. It's not an option to not learn. If you do not learn, you will not get your job in tech. That's it.
Yeah.
Everything moves so fast. You cannot learn everything. And it's, sometimes it feels like you know nothing at all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Even after 15 years, I sometimes still think, wow, how do these guys do this? Or how do these women do this? I have no idea. And so you should learn this, right? But I think for me and for everybody, you should gain confidence from the problems that you've already solved, actually. And it doesn't have to be big problems, but if you know for sure that almost any complex problem, and you know that you can break it down into smaller problems, even if you don't know yet how you will solve it, because you can always Google that, right?
True.
It's true, right?
Yeah.
I think that's the biggest thing that you can have against the imposter syndrome. Every once in a while, when you feel insecure, you should think, yeah, but I did solve that problem, so I will probably be able to solve this one as well.
Oh, that's a good one. Yeah.
Yeah. And then the other downside that I would say that I have experienced a lot is deadlines. Everything is money and time.
Spot on. Yeah.
That is tough. Yeah.
Full tough.
So, yeah. It's very tough working with deadlines because they force you. You do it yourself. You do it onto yourself, right? But you want to finish it. And so you would neglect your free time and your family and your loved ones just to get it done. And it's okay if you do it every once in a while, but deadlines keep on coming. They always keep on coming. So
I know, right? Yeah. I know, right? There's I did talk about this in one episode about the downside to tech. And I think one of the things I mentioned was the long hours. And the truth is, no matter how much you try, especially if you work from home, there is little to work-life balance. You have to actively enforce it that you want a balance. Otherwise, it's just take over everything and then there is no balance. So, yeah.
It took me too long to realize this because I have not always found a good balance between work and free time.
Yeah, you and everyone else.
Yeah, probably. Yes, probably. But I do feel like the younger people, it's not that I'm old or anything, but the younger people that start getting into the business have more sense of this work-life balance. They do not always want to do the long hours anymore, which is also double, I think. It's my subjective feeling, right? I'm not entirely sure if this is. I don't have data on this, but it feels like that. It feels like everybody now today is more aware of work-life balance than people were 10 years ago.
Yeah.
Now that we are talking about this, I'm not doing good either. I've been working since 6:30 this morning. And after this, I'm going to have dinner and work some more. But on the other hand, I mean, I have my passion, which is my platform about software and system design, right?
Yeah.
So it doesn't feel bad and I don't have the deadlines. But on the other hand, I'm not seeing friends or anything, right?
Yeah. So it's too deceptive. You know, working on your hobby, working on your real job, working on your passion, it's still work. And the life is that time you spend with people outside of work. So yeah, the balance is so help us God, because really that balance is something to write home about. Do you think you have any parting words for, you know, junior developers, or, you know, junior or not necessarily junior, but anyone?
Yeah, sure. I think the biggest thing that I've seen for people coming into the tech world is that sometimes they seem to be afraid to just ask questions if they do not understand.
Mm.
Just ask. Don't be afraid. Even if your question sounds really dumb.
Yeah.
If you cannot find the answer on Google, then it's not a dumb question.
Or
you should be asking somebody, how does this work? How do you think it works? Mm. I do not understand this. Can you please try and explain it again to me?
Mm.
It's so valuable. I think seniors, they will most of the time not offer to mentor or to coach somebody. Mm. But if there is somebody who asks them, like, can you please explain it to me? Most of the time they will take their time and explain. Mm. So you shouldn't be afraid. There's nobody, there shouldn't be anybody who says, no, I do not have time. Also, don't be afraid to try out things that you've never tried out before. Don't be afraid to fail and never give up. If you're passionate about it, just do not give up.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Nicholas. Thank you.
My pleasure, really. If you have questions, you know where I am on LinkedIn. Don't be afraid to ask.
it's been such an honor learning from, you know, your experience and knowledge. Thank you so much for hanging out with Nicholas and I. I hope you learned something new, pondered on something new, or something made listening worth your time. You can catch Nicholas Oquette on LinkedIn as Nicholas Oquette, or on his platform, that's aboutcoding.be, aboutcoding, no space, .be. And I'll see you on the next episode. Till then, keep learning, keep having fun.